there, little bunny. I hope you've been having a wonderful, wonderful week. And even if not, that's okay, too. Welcome, little bunny, to the 100th episode. Can you believe it? I can believe it. I never had any doubt. But it's fun to relish in the moment, isn't it? And I really want to take my time with this one. I just want to take it slow and enjoy this time that I get to spend with you. This is precious, precious time for both you and for me together. You want to take a breath with me? I love you, little bunny. I love you so, so much. I guess I had been thinking about what to do for the 100th episode for a long while. And I've alluded to it in previous episodes. Like, maybe I'll eventually tell you the secret story, my origin story. What is the origin story of the mysterious Mr. Lindy? The mysterious Daddy Lindy. How did he get to be here? How did he get to be your daddy, little bunny? I will tell you when I get this coffee in my system. As you know, it is late. It is almost the stroke of midnight. Oh, there it was. That was midnight. It changed as I was looking at it. That was awesome. I loved that. I am going to pour this decaf coffee. This decaf coffee. Take a sip, and I won't do it right in your ears because I think my sipping ASMR days are done. I'm not sure that was ever good to begin with. But we give ourselves permission to experiment here in the garden, don't we, little bunny? Both me and you. Experiment with creative things. And I have some I'm so excited about. Oh, I cannot wait to tell you. Okay, let me pour this coffee. I'll let you listen to the coffee being poured. The final sipping ASMR for episode 100 with that tradition to end. I don't know. Should I do it? Am I going to slurp in your ears, little bunny? What do you think? 3, 2, 1. Ha, you thought I would do it, didn't you? Okay. Always full of surprises. Your daddy is full of surprises, isn't he? That's right. I guess. Why don't I just start with what I'm enthusiastic about right now? First, a congratulations to me that I finished my audiobook episodic series called A Year of Love and Ligature. And I think it's all for free on the Patreon, even though the Patreon is generally behind a paywall and it is 18 plus only. So don't join if you're not 18. For whatever reason, I put Love and Ligature for free. You can really see the progression of me growing as a writer and a voice person. I guess in that instance, it's a narrator. And just the creative growth the whole way through. That's what this is all about, little bunny. This is some of the great joy that I get, that you enable me to do. So I get to be creative. I get to create things. Fun, entertaining, artistic things. That sweet spot combination of artistically interesting and great, yet unapologetically indulgent, fun, and entertaining. I love being in that spot. Wow. I think I'm going to inspire myself this episode. But coinciding with Love and Ligature wrapping up, I think I will at some point revisit it. I have some ambitions with like maybe some manga type stuff or maybe a revised audiobook that's, you know, once I'm better. As I'm getting better and better at writing, I might revisit that story. But at the moment, I'll be doing some more short fictions, just short stories. But also, I announced a while ago that I am indeed making a garden video game. And I have been waiting for AI to get to the point where it can be my own personal assistant with creating a game. I'm never going to go, AI, write me a story. I'm never going to say, AI, create this thing for me. But I had an enormous, enormous breakthrough this past week, Little Bunny, where I have been training ChatGPT to write this very specific way of coding. I haven't really like developed it, but I've kind of outlined it. I won't bore you with the details, but oh my God, Little Bunny, incredible things on the horizon for Garden Video Game. Not in terms of production value. It's going to be very humble in terms of visuals and things like that, but it is going to be pretty freaking special and spectacular in ways that have never been done in video games before. I want to tell you about it more, but I guess I will wait. What else is new? Videos are going good. Make sure you subscribe on all the spots. Make sure you actually subscribe to the podcast so you don't have to rediscover. So that it's easy for me to come to you every week. Okay. And all the platforms that do the things. Okay, great. Let me take a sip of this. Emailing list. Be sure to get on the Fiction emailing list. I'm backing myself into a corner and I'm insisting that it will only be for Fiction stuff. So there is no spam. It's not, hey, latest this, go buy hoodies and things like that. It's just whenever Fiction gets released, it's just the only way I can really announce it. So you can find that in the link in the podcast bio or whatever, on the social medias and stuff like that. You can find it. You're smart. Okay. And so what I had alluded to do for this 100th episode back in previous episodes is I thought I would tell you my origin story. And parts of it are depressing. And originally it was going to be this really kind of sad episode where I bring you to tears of sadness and then joy and rebirth. And it was going to be kind of this really sappy episode. But I realized I don't really care to do that anymore. Also because I have a better idea anyway, which is more me. And it's that I will tell you the story, but with a twist. So, detour again. I've been talking a little bit about Baldur's Gate 3. By a little bit, I mean I keep talking about it. It's this medieval fantasy video game. And it's so cool that the story can branch in all these different ways. And it's just gotten me thinking about story. I'm just like so in the mode of medieval fantasy storytelling. So I am going to tell you, Little Bunny, my origin story as an allegory in a fictional medieval fantasy RPG setting. So I'm going to kind of improvise a story. I have a vague outline of what it's going to be. And because I enjoy my anonymity, it's purposely vague enough and misleading in places to where really don't try and figure out what's what. You know what I mean? It's just a story. And the important part is that kind of the underlying meaning, the underlying feelings behind all the different beats of the story, that's what it's really about. So it's not so much like what job did I have here or what city was this? Or like, you know, I won't even go into it. I'm just going to tell you an allegory with plenty of creative liberties so that you can just turn off Sherlock Holmes in your mind, not to reference other intellectual property. You can turn off the detective in your mind and just enjoy a story that your daddy is telling to you. So, back to Baldur's Gate 3 briefly, speaking of not talking about other intellectual property. I guess it's technically D&D, but in so many fantasy role-playing games, that's what RPG stands for. Don't worry about what it means. You get to play as a class, right? You're like a medieval fantasy, and you can play as a warrior if you want, or a wizard, or like a paladin or a cleric. One second. Or a hunter, and you can have a bow and a pet, things like that. So I think it's always fun to try and think about what kind of class you would be. Do you know what class you would be, little bunny, if you're familiar with RPG archetypes? And if you're not, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Yeah, I have a few favorites that I like. But I think what I would really be. It's okay if you don't understand what this means. I think I would be a combination between a bard and a paladin. Bards are the singers and the poets and the storytellers. They're the entertainers. But they're not so much the leaders. They're not so much the principled ones. The typical bard will embellish stories and just kind of whisk around on the outskirts of things. They're not really the heroes of the story. And paladins are the protectors, very strongly principled. Not only are they the tanks and the fighters, but they're healers too. It's this very interesting combination of a very strong fighter who can't be taken down and someone who can also heal those that he cares about, those that he wants to protect. I say he because I'm referring to me. Paladins can be anything. Of course, there's no real paladins. I guess. I don't know. So anyway, I see myself as a blend of the two. I'm the creative storyteller. I don't really sing necessarily. Actually, no, some of the locked audios I sing to you. I've written you songs, little bunny, in the Patreon. That's the locked section of the garden. Yeah, quite literally, your bard. I wrote the podcast music, which I could do a better job at this point. I think there's some, I'm always looking to improve, but I love that. I love that theme. I love it very much. I wrote that. And yet I'm also me, little bunny. You know me. You know I like to guide you and protect you and give you little bunny kisses. Kisses on your forehead. Daddy kisses on your bunny forehead. And I have a healing power on you. Don't I, little bunny? You can just curl up in my lap or be held in my arms. And you're safe here. This is a place of pure, utter safety. I will always, always be here for you. I will never leave. You will never not have. We'll always be doing this. So there's quite a bit of security and strength and healing mixed in me as well. And it's very core to me as well. So that's your daddy. Some combination between a bard and a paladin. And we will just have to invent a new class name for that. Whatever it becomes, I will be the ideal archetype of it. So, once upon a time, before your daddy was your daddy, Lindy, he was a simple bard named Atlas. Shout out to your wonderful right-hand bunny for coming up with the name Atlas. It's perfect. I love it. So, before your dear Daddy Lindy. What's your dear Daddy Lindy? He was a bard by the name of Atlas. There's your ugly sipping sounds. I guess those aren't going anywhere. And Atlas the Bard lived in a pleasant countryside town. Nice in the hills, always a good breeze, scatterings of trees, partly cloudy every day of the year. It's a perfect vacation town, where all the people of the kingdom, especially lived in the capital city, they would love to come out there, especially in the hot days of the city when things are really sweaty in the capital city, and dirty and grungy and gross. They would go out in their carriages, their horse-drawn carriages, out to the country village, which is famous for a guild of bards. And this guild of bards did it all. They wrote poetry. They sang songs. They would put on theatrical plays. They would do painting as well. Playwrights. All of the typical media. All the mediums that you could do. And the city dwellers slaving away in their sweaty jobs in the sweaty city, the dirty streets, would escape for the weekends to this countryside town where the Guild of Bards runs the show. And it's a comfortable life. And it's a fun life. It's not a life of greatness, though. But Atlas did it, and he was good at it. And your daddy is going to take a sip of coffee. Okay, we're getting a little improvisatory here because I know some of the main story beats, but we got to figure out our way there. So I'm going to give myself permission to mess up. I'm going to give myself permission to be bad. It's okay if I tell you a bad story. We're going to enjoy it together. That's how we do it, little bunny. So, Atlas was different than the other bards because Atlas had a curse on him. It was a family curse that every once in a while, one of his lineage will have the curse. They'll be born with it and it'll stay with them until they die. And Atlas didn't really know about the curse as he was a young bard in the country town with the Guild of Bards. But Atlas was starting to feel bored of this life. He wanted a life of greatness. He had an ambition in him that the other bards simply didn't have. The other bards were content to sing the same songs and act the same plays and paint the same landscapes. And even when they wrote new songs or wrote new plays, they would just kind of be reshuffling the same old thing. And that town was in its end state. It was perfect, just as it was. A true paradise. But it would never be anything other than what it was. There was no more room to grow. And as the Guild of Bards saw it, no more need to grow either. And Atlas, when playing his lute and singing his songs, which were always a little bit too innovative for the taste of the fellow bards of the guild, he would chat with the visitors from the capital city. And they came from all types of jobs and had all kinds of backgrounds and skill sets and personalities. But Atlas detected one common thing, one common theme among all the visitors to the country village. It's that they had a fire in them. They had a hunger. They had a drive. They had ambition. They wanted greatness, and they were great. And they left their lives of greatness just for a weekend to come to the country estate to unwind. And Atlas knew, even though the bards would never want to leave, these visitors from the capital city, they came here to rejuvenate, but there's no way they would stay any more than just 3 days, because the fire and the hunger within them would draw them back to the capital city, and they would build, and they would do also all sorts of whatever jobs can have greatness. And so Atlas would see them go off just one by one. They would come and they would go back to the capital city. And Atlas began to identify more with those visitors to the country village who belonged to the city. So Atlas decided one day that he would leave and he would go be a bard in the capital city. So he packed up his few belongings, loot on his shoulder. He hitches a ride with one of the patrons from that came to see him sing a song at the country estate. And then Atlas hops off in the city, and he's in the lower city. It's all he can afford right now. It's the grungiest part. There's lots of beggars on the street. People have grime on their faces. Even the streets are darker. There's less sunlight. And there's less lighting, less torches along to light the way at night. It's more dangerous too. But Atlas loved it. He loved it more than if he were in the royal palace. So Atlas went to it, and he began writing songs as a bard, this time not being constrained by the typical confines. Can you hear the city, by the way? Pause. Okay. It's going to distract me, but I guess it's poetic at the moment that the siren chooses to go by. If you couldn't hear that, there's a siren going. Okay, so so Atlas is in the lower city, and he's writing songs, and he's now leaning into this desire to innovate, and he's letting go of the culture of the guild of bards out in the countryside. And he's writing and writing, and he's performing and performing in the capital city, but without the structure of the guild, he realizes he's trying to make his own schedule, and he's trying to figure out his own way through life, and it was a lot easier just kind of going along with the flow in a pre-existing structure, and to make it as a bard in the capital city. But he wasn't deterred. Atlas wasn't deterred. He kept at it. And as he kept writing, he kept innovating, and he knew that to innovating and doing things different and more creatively, and he loved what he was creating. But he began to realize that the curse that hadn't affected him, the family curse, was beginning to take hold of his life. And in the flashes of the creativity, he realized that perhaps it was the curse that enabled him to be so creative. And the innovation that he had come to admire so much in his own work perhaps was only possible through the curse, Or at least the curse made him just crazy enough to be able to think so differently. And so the more Atlas created, the more he allowed his curse to grow stronger and stronger. He would be up at all hours, writing and writing, whether it be songs or poems or stories. And Atlas began to get confused with what was real in the capital city and what was part of his fiction that he was creating. And the lines were blurred, and he was ascending to this higher, higher plane of pure creative expression and pure creative energy. This higher plane, this higher realm, which I don't know the name of it right now. Atlas realized that this realm, as he got closer and closer and deeper immersed in it, this energy, he could channel all this energy and turn it into the most beautiful poems ever written, the most beautiful songs ever sung, the most beautiful stories ever crafted. He realized that this is the energy that all the bards draw upon, that perhaps bards are like wizards, and the chills that we feel when a bard touches us in just the right way with their craft, that they've channeled from this higher plane, this very, very beautiful touch of energy that fulfills you, inspires you. And the bards are these mediums between this higher plane and you, the one receiving what the bard has to give. Atlas was realizing that through his curse, he had access to this higher plane, directly to the source, that he could be within the energy and wield it in ways that no bard ever could before. And so the deeper he went, the more Atlas began to forget and get confused about what was in the higher realm and what was in the grungy, real realm of the capital city. And through a whirlwind of great intensity, which will be saved for another story, Atlas becomes fully 100% immersed in the higher plane of creative energy. And he's in a snap, wakes up to find himself back in the countryside. And he's in his bed with the guild of bards all around him. And he wakes up, he's not sure where he is. It takes him a second. Sorry, my audio cut out for a second. But Atlas has woken up and he says, "What happened to that higher plane of existence? Where I was in the realm of the pure energy that the bards draw from and give to the mere mortals." He couldn't feel it at all. And so Atlas gets up out of bed, and no one seems to know what he's talking about. He says, I left and I went to the city, and I went for it, and I was writing the best stuff that I've ever written, and I was so creative. And what happened to it all? And the bards look at him confused with the guilt, and they say, "Atlas, what are you talking about? You've only ever lived here, and you've never left, and why would you want to leave? It's just so perfect here. We just sing the same songs, and we've reached the end state of what life can be." And so, confused, Atlas picks up his lute again and strums it, and the most horrible sound comes from the lute. The other bards wince and look over at Atlas, confused that Atlas would play such a horrible sound. And Atlas says, I'm sorry, I don't know. I don't know what just happened. And Atlas puts down the lute and says, I'll go work on a poem. So Atlas goes and he writes a poem and he's not really sure about it. He kind of reads it aloud to himself. And in the next room, a bard screams. The bard says, that's the worst poem I've ever heard. And what's awful is Atlas knows that he's correct. Atlas has forgotten how to play the lute and has forgotten how to write the poetry. His singing voice doesn't sound as good. So Atlas knows something did happen. It can't have all just been a dream. Atlas, for better or actually only for worse, lost his powers as a bard. Then he was just Atlas. Just Atlas. And when the other bards realized that Atlas could no longer perform and entertain the guests who were on vacation from the capital city, they didn't want to kick him out. They were friendly. So they gave Atlas work as a clerk of sorts. So the bards, when they would write a new play, let's say, they would scribble it in their furious moments of pure bardic inspiration, as they can feel, though they don't totally realize it. They're feeling the power of the higher plane and they're scratching it out into paper. They hand it to Atlas and they say, Atlas, I need you to rewrite this letter for letter, word for word, sentence by sentence, just more legibly. Make it look neat, nice and neat. There you go. And so Atlas went to it and he would write down the words of the other bards and make sure that the T's look all good and the I's get dotted in just the right way. And, as he does it more and more, he gets better and better. And the letters are spaced out nice and beautifully. And the manuscripts that he's creating begin to look very, very good. And yeah, the bards are happy with Atlas. He's not Atlas the Bard anymore, and they don't invite him to the bard activities. But he does a good job, and he is capable. He's not worthless. But Atlas is not happy. Atlas is not happy like this. And at first, he thinks maybe it's I need to do a better job writing the letters the right way. Maybe I need to work on... I mean, I guess I'm a copy, little bunny. Okay. This is about 60% improvisation. Okay. Okay. Atlas is depressed. And the other bards notice that Atlas is depressed. But they think it's because Atlas lost his ability to play the lute. Lost his ability to put words in just the right order to make people's hair, what do you call it? Like when you get goosebumps or whatever. There's got to be a really beautiful way to say get goosebumps. We'll work on that. Sounds like a job for a bard. So the other bards say it's understandable that Atlas is depressed because he lost his ability to be a bard. And now he's just Atlas, the guy. But Atlas begins to realize the truth, that perhaps it was real, that he did move to the city. Perhaps it was real, that he tried to indulge in the powers of the curse that it bestowed upon him. But it proved too much for Atlas. And the power of the curse overtook him, and he couldn't control it, he couldn't handle it. And nothing is given for free, this curse. Now the curse has taken its toll. From now until forever, until the end of his life, let's say, Atlas is depressed. And it's just what life is now for Atlas. As he sees it. And even as he looks out at the beautiful countryside that's been painted a million times on the estate, all Atlas sees in nature is the screams. Screams of dying animals. The food chain. Crickets being eaten by birds. Birds being eaten by cats. And so on up. So many countless, even down to the scale of microbes. Microbes dying and killing each other and reproducing just to die and kill each other and reproduce. This endless, endless vortex of suffering. That's all Atlas sees when he looks out at the beautiful landscape that the bards see as this beautiful, quaint countryside. And the food, of course, the food is incredible at the bard countryside. It's also what the city dwellers come out to go taste, is some of the wonderful cooking. But Atlas just tastes the blandness of it. What is the point of spice? He can't even taste it anymore. There's nothing left to bring him joy. Even the work of the other bards, after Atlas had been in the realm of the pure creativity, everything these lowly bards create is just cliche after recycled cliche. And well, maybe it would have been good once. One second. There could be no more new effects on Atlas. No more new realizations. And the bards don't want to innovate. The bards of this guild don't want to innovate. They just want to reshuffle and reshuffle and reshuffle. And so, Atlas is comforted by knowing that at least he did get a chance to see the greatness, and that even though from now until the end he would be depressed, that it would eventually end, and he would move on to an endless slumber. And Atlas found comfort in that. Knowing that as bad as this life was, it wouldn't last forever. But then, Atlas hears a voice. It says, "Atlas, Atlas, can you hear me?" And Atlas looks around and doesn't think much of it. Goes back to eating the bland food. "Atlas, can you hear me?" This is so good, little bunny, isn't it? Oh my god, I'm fucking amazing. Okay. And Atlas goes and works on his clerk duties. Writing stuff. Okay. And then Atlas goes to bed, let's say. I gotta get my storytelling mojo back, little bunny. Here we go. As Atlas drifts to sleep, he hears the voice more clearly. Atlas. Atlas, can you hear me? And vaguely into view in his dream, Atlas sees someone who looks quite similar to himself, but different, just vaguely similar. And Atlas says, who are you? And the voice says, Atlas, do you recognize me? And Atlas says, you look kind of like me. The voice says, Atlas, I am your ancestor. I am one of your family tree that had also been given the curse that you have that has been running in our family for generations. And Atlas suddenly realizes that this ancestor must have experience with this curse. Maybe they know if there's a way out of it. Can you get out of the curse? Maybe then Atlas would get his bard abilities back and the countryside would look beautiful again, and he would enjoy food and enjoy life like before. The ancestor says, Atlas, I don't have much time, but I have to warn you. Atlas says, what? Warn me about what? I have so many questions for you. Don't go yet. The ancestor says, Atlas. Atlas says, can I get rid of the curse? Is it possible? The ancestor says, no, Atlas. The curse is permanent. You will never be free from the curse. And he says, but Atlas, listen to me. You must understand. Is your life depressing right now? Atlas says, yes, oh my God, my life sucks now. The ancestor says, and you're hoping that someday it'll all be over. And Atlas says, yes, of course. That's the only thing that I'm holding on to is knowing that I won't have to live like this forever. And the ancestor says, I have come to warn you about the worst part of the curse. Atlas, when you die, you will be reborn as yourself to live the exact same life. And you will do the exact same things and experience the exact same rapture into the higher plane. And the crash back down into this life you're in now. And this miserable state of depression that you're in, Atlas. That you're living. That you know that someday it will end. I'm sorry, Atlas. This is forever. This is the endless cycle of the curse. You will live this life over and over and over again. Atlas says, you mean that this has already happened before then? The ancestor says, yes, Atlas. This is not the first time you've lived this life. You've been living this life infinitely in the past and will live it infinitely in the future. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Atlas. And then the ancestor fades away. Atlas is lost in a dark emptiness in his dream. And Atlas wakes up. The world has never felt more bleak and more dreary. Atlas goes outside and he can actively hear the screams of nature and the cruelty of it. And the songs of the bards now sound like chaos on his ears, and the food tastes revolting. And Atlas knows that he's been here before, and before, and before, and that though he was hoping someday it would be all over, he knows now that through the curse, he will be back here again, and again, and again. Inescapable life of despair. Now I'm going to take a sip of coffee. And so, what does Atlas do? He picks up his quill again. And he grabs a scroll of parchment. He goes on a long, long walk, far, far away from the country estate with the bard, guild of bards. And he finds a spot by the ocean side where the waves coming in and out, crashing on the rocks. One second. It drowns out the sounds of nature, the screaming sounds of nature that he hears. He just listens to the waves. And he just breathes. And he sits there with the blank parchment and the quill. And he decides he's in no rush to write whatever he's going to write. And he's just going to listen to these waves. Just pretend nothing in the world exists but just that sound. Can you hear the waves, little bunny, rolling in and out? Atlas focuses his mind. Nothing exists beyond just the waves coming in and out. Atlas brings his quill to the paper and begins to write. The next day, Atlas feels much the same. The days are depressing, and the food tastes revolting even though it's delicious to everyone else. But Atlas grabs from the kitchen's a flagon of coffee, whatever they would do, like a to-go cup, a medieval to-go cup of coffee. And he goes out to his spot overlooking the waves, and he brings his quill and his parchment. And again, he closes his eyes, and he works to forget all the bad things in his life. Because in some true sense, as he listens to the waves, those things don't exist here. Nothing exists but just the waves rolling in. And he takes a sip of his coffee. And because of the curse, it tastes revolting. But Atlas chooses just to notice it. Just notice it. Tastes disgusting. And in fact, he finds a way, a cruel way, of laughing at how ridiculous the coffee tastes. And so Atlas writes about it. He writes about how bad the coffee tastes.
He finds the humor in it.
And next day, Atlas goes back with his medieval to-go cup of coffee at the waves, and he starts writing jokes about how shitty his life is. He starts writing the tale of Atlas the Bard, and how Atlas the Bard had this curse that allowed him to access this higher plane of pure creativity that the other bards can just get slivers of. And that the curse allowed him to access that plane, and it took it away from him. And it took its price, which was that the rest of his life would be dismal and unenjoyable. And yeah, Atlas was still of the belief at this time that he wished that he never had lived. But there was nothing to do at this point, because he already existed with the curse, and he had to make peace with his life. So he wrote the tale of Atlas, and the horrible plot twist, the curse, and things like that. He did eventually make himself laugh at the absurdity of the conundrum he had found himself in, this curse of eternal return. And that this horrible life he would just have to live over and over and over again. And when he made himself laugh at that, when he found himself enjoying the bad coffee, he noticed that it was kind of interesting. It was almost like being told a new story by a new bard. And Atlas began to look forward to every day going to the country, going to the shore. I don't know where he is. He's like some picturesque spot looking out at the ocean, the waves crashing on the rocks. I need to take a quick break to gather myself. I'm not losing steam, don't worry. This is your daddy's coffee break. How about we enjoy? I just now realized I have coffee during this. You want to witness Atlas enjoying some coffee? You know, it doesn't even taste good. At least this cup I have here. It really doesn't taste good. But I love it. It's fun. It's interesting. It tickles me in the same way you might get tickled watching a fun movie or hearing a song you like. Atlas, the former bard, was beginning to realize that things don't always have to be good in order to enjoy life. I'm going to keep sipping while I figure out where to go from here. Remember, give myself permission to be bad. This doesn't have to be the best story ever told. It just needs to be my story. I need to enjoy telling it. I am enjoying telling it.
Where are we even? We're not even to the garden yet, little bunny.
This is going to be a long episode. This is going to be a long episode. Okay. Where are we at? Okay, so we're going to have to skip ahead a little bit. Okay, so give me 1 second. So Atlas begins to feel a glimmer. And he imagines... He begins to think back to his time in the city, and he's not nostalgic for it, because he knows that he can't exist as a bard in the city. But the side of him that was drawn to the greatness seems to be reawakening in him, And though his life is not enjoyable, he's found a way to be entertained by what's not great. One second. Okay. So, Atlas bids farewell to the bards. And he moves back to the city. But this time, oh my God, give me one second. Okay. So Atlas moves back to the capital city, but not as a bard anymore. Atlas gets a job with his new skills, with his meticulous clerk-like skills, and he is inspired by them. Sorry, one second. Okay, there was some stirring behind me. I'm going to ramp up the pace of this. We got to pick up the pace of this story. Okay. So, Atlas gets a job building the city. And he, this time, instead of helping the bards transcribe and make beautiful their shitty poems and plays, Atlas is working on the drawings that the builders are using for the city. He's working with the engineers. And his job isn't to be creative and to design, but he's to be organized and to be disciplined and meticulous and to help build the city. And Atlas finds a satisfaction in this, a structure. Dare he even say a happiness? It's not a life of glory. It's not a life of thrill. But Atlas reminds himself of the old city folk who used to come up to the country estate that he used to play for when they came up on weekends. And in fact, Atlas too begins going back to the country estate on weekends, although instead of going to the shows and the plays and the inns where the bards perform, he goes to the shore to listen to the waves and to sip coffee and to just journal his thoughts. Not for anyone else, just writing for himself. And then he's back in the city and he's working on building the city. And he's not living in the lower city this time, he's living in the middle city. And it's, he feels the power of the city and he feels himself grow in competence as well. And he even begins to live in the upper city. And he's doing well by most objective measures. And his life, which he's doomed to repeat forever and forever, he's realizing that, you know, he did overcome the curse in some sense. He was able to get a life that is nice, pleasant, not great, but not bad, comfortable, though not too exciting. But Atlas is happy. He's content with this. And he says, if things go like this forever, and then the end comes and I repeat, I'll have my years as a bard. I'll have that wild experience into the higher plane that the curse allowed me to access. And then I'll crash and I'll have a period of the most horrible, horrible lows that one can experience, at least on the inside. Atlas felt very, very privileged that his needs were met. He never had to worry about going hungry. He always had a bed to sleep on, sheltered from the rain. But the experience of suffering was very potent and very extreme. But Atlas knew now that working with the builders of the city, he could get past that chapter and live just a neutral life to the end, where he would repeat. And you know, life isn't this horrible, horrible burden after all. But then, little bunny, a fog descended upon the entire capital city. And the fog was so thick and stayed for so long that it completely upended everyone's way of life. You would walk down the street and not see a single other person. They were there, but the fog was so thick that you could barely see your hand in front of your face. And the city still managed to function somehow. Atlas still went to work, but he sat alone at his desk. There were co-workers there. There were his colleagues. But they were separated by a fog. He couldn't see them, and it felt like they weren't there. Felt like he was alone, kind of like being on the shore back when he was recovering. And Atlas kept at his job. He couldn't go out and do the things in the city like he would. I guess that's for another retelling of this, all the wonderful perks that come with city life. The glitz and the glamour. So Atlas just spent his days in the fog, isolated, doing his work. And he couldn't see the fruits of his labor. The city was being built, but he couldn't see the city being built because of the fog. And he was just doing his job meticulous, and he could feel the creative side in him wanting to express itself in some way. It was just becoming so dull and lifeless that Atlas took some stabs at, like, what if I could innovate with these, with how we're building the city? What kind of new, interesting things can we do? And Atlas was told not to do that, just to stick with the way things are done. Just kind of do your neat job and do things the right way, like we've always done them. And so Atlas continued because he wasn't the boss. Though maybe he would have been a better boss, who knows? Atlas continued to do his job, realizing that it's not a proper place for the creative side of him, the side that wants to innovate. It's just meant to put the quill on the paper, just kind of do what needs to be done. And the curse began acting up. Hold on, I have to decide what the curse does. The curse is going to do something. Give me a second to pour myself some more coffee. I wonder, how are you enjoying this, little bunny? You enjoying this? I have a couple different ways I can go, and I gotta think about it. I might pause for 1 second. Okay, I've got it. So, Atlas is wandering around the city in the fog, starting to feel a bit of a, not a dreariness, but a feeling like he's meant for something greater. And that feeling that brought him to the city, that made him identify so much with those people who used to come on the weekends to visit the country estate. He feels that that side of himself is somehow to the core of who he is, this ambition for greatness, and this creativity too. And he realizes that while his life is passable, it's not what it could be. It's not what he's capable of. And so Atlas is wandering the lower city where he had once moved to the city in what seems like a dream. And Atlas walks down memory lane, quite literally, and is reminded of what that higher plane had shown him when the curse allowed him to have the whole force of that plane, the whole fountain of creative energy. The most extreme states, surreal. And Atlas remembered some of them and what it felt like. And Atlas knew that he had a question to answer, whether to see if he could access some of that creativity again, this time being more capable. By the way, take your meds. I take my meds. This sounds like an allegory of going off your meds. It is not. Take your meds. Okay. So Atlas is like, can I use the power of the curse, but this time be in control? I'm stronger now, more capable. Perhaps the problem is that back then when I was younger, still Atlas the Bard, perhaps I wasn't strong enough to handle what the curse could provide. But perhaps now I can. Atlas thought about this. He went back to his job and he moved the quill on the paper in the proper ways, lost in the fog. And what did he do? Let me pause and decide what he did. Okay. He began. I'm going to have to get vague here because I don't quite know. Give myself permission to be bad. Atlas gets in touch with the curse. And the curse says it allows him to channel the higher plane that the bards could only get strands of. And Atlas communes and he keeps it separate from his work. He moves his quill along the parchment as he's supposed to by day. And then by night, he takes his own personal quill and parchment and starts to channel the curse. He has long ago forgotten how to play the lute, how to write the poetry, but he had never lost the curse. So he communes with the curse. If he can't play the lute, he can't write poetry. He doesn't need to, because he's destined for something much, much greater. So Atlas is working with the curse to see if he can access some of the true raw energy of the higher plane. Atlas doesn't want to be bound by the mediums, the media of the bards on the country estate, who they know it's like creativity is painting and it's plays and it's songs that go A, B, A. You know, it kind of know what I mean? I'll move on. So, let me enjoy some bad coffee. Here we go. So, where are we? Okay. The fog eventually lifts. And Atlas is thrilled to be back. Seeing his coworkers, seeing the city be built around him, and he goes and he goes out at night and enjoys the nightlife that will be explained in some future retelling of this story. And but the spark of inspiration had ignited something inside him. And Atlas knew there was no way. He could just be a clerk. Even if it let him live in whatever part of the city he's in now. So, Atlas was getting stronger and stronger with the curse. And he knew the curse was powerful, and he wondered if he had begun to unlock the curse in ways that no one in his family had ever done before. And by now, the powers that Atlas was developing was these powers to, instead of touch people through the power of song and through poetry, he knew now, understanding that bards are like wizards channeling this higher energy. Atlas now understood and was having more and more access to the source of this power, that one didn't need to use poems and songs. And Atlas began to have a more wizard-like approach, more mage-like approach to this energy. And Atlas found that as he walked around the streets and he worked on this, he was able to, almost like casting a spell. He could send those chills that the bard spent so long trying to figure out just the right words and just the right notes. Just a wave of his hand, Atlas can send the chills on someone and they don't know what happens. They just feel inspired. Something washes over them. Just with the wave of his hand. Atlas begins doing this all around the city. This becomes his new obsession, is this ability to channel this creative inspiration into people. And Atlas realizes that he no longer needs, for the story, Atlas no longer needs sleep. Get your freaking sleep, little bunny. You go to bed on time. Atlas, in the story, discovers he no longer needs sleep, and he's able to. He feels more and more like some kind of ascended being. This is an allegory. Don't worry, little bunny. Okay. So, Atlas is discovering these new powers, and he starts wearing a cloak, like a cape, around as he walks through the city. And he's just doing slow motions with his hands, casting spells over people. And Atlas learns very quickly that he has a very seductive power too. And this energy that the bards could only dream of accessing, it includes a very luscious side of inspiration, shall we say. And Atlas can find that with the wave of his hand, he can have people crumble to their knees on the streets, moaning with pleasure. And he enjoys doing this, walking down the streets. He sees someone and then whoosh, with a wave of his hand, they're on the ground in pleasure. And Atlas finds too that he can inspire people in the capital city to make their lives more what they want, to be their best selves, to lead the lives they're capable of. And Atlas notices that there's a beggar that sometimes he casts his spell on. And the beggar, well, she still has a grime on her face and her clothes are still tattered. He notices that she starts playing the lute now, actually, and she's gathering tips. And Atlas, too, loves giving her a tip when he sees her play the lute. And Atlas wonders whether it was because of him that he, bardic inspiration, I don't know what you want to call it, whatever Atlas was casting, whether that's what it was. And there's a blacksmith apprentice that Atlas has been enjoying casting the spell on them. And the blacksmith apprentice goes on to open their own smithy. But Atlas also notices that it doesn't work on everyone. And he also notices that it tends to not work on people he doesn't like. And it tends to work well on people that he does like. And Atlas begins to wonder whether part of his power is that he's able to bring betterment, happiness, inspiration, and pleasure to the people that he loves. And that maybe his power doesn't even work on people he doesn't like. There's the people that are, remember, the capital city is grimy and grungy. There's people running scams. There's theft, there's liars, there's backstabbers. There's all kinds of unsettlingly nasty, mean, vile people in the city that keep it grungy and dark. And I'm not sure in the story whether Atlas's powers don't work on them or whether he doesn't want to use his powers on them. TBD, pick whichever you prefer. But Atlas realizes, for whatever reason, that part of his ability is to find incredible people, that there's a resonance he has with a certain kind of person in the capital city. And his powers feel good to him when he uses it on those people, the people he resonates with. And so Atlas indulges in his curse more and more because he wants to do something very, very special. And Atlas, being more and more competent, is able to safely wield the curse. And he has his potion medications that he always takes. From the apothecary. I love this. Okay. So Atlas increases his powers little by little or lot by lot. And he creates, scattered throughout the city, little portals to a special, special place. And only the people he resonates with can find those portals. And anywhere people are, they can gather. In any number of ways they can find it, they gather in a very, very special place. And there, how do I end this beautifully? You get where this is going, right? Yeah. Should I complete it now? Okay, so it hasn't launched yet. Atlas has been creating these portals all throughout the city. And then Atlas and the my storytelling is suffering. It's okay. Give myself permission to be bad. So Atlas has created these portals all around the capital city. And then with the power of the curse, he's able to wield this power stronger and stronger. And he's able to create a literal place within this plane. There's a bubble around it because the plane is very dangerous. It's very potent. But Atlas is becoming more and more powerful. And in this higher plane of pure creativity, there exists a bubble. And inside the bubble, it is beautiful, green, luscious, full of life, pleasant life, without the screaming of the food chain. There's no meat eating in the garden. Actually, there's no meat pictures allowed in the Discord. Hopefully that will make sense now. Yeah, and the portals all throughout the city lead in different ways to this bubble. And only those that Atlas resonates with can find their way in there. And I'm trying to decide now whether like I appear. I don't know. Well, what happens? Sorry for the gurgling sound. I think I might leave it on a cliffhanger. I think I'll do that. So how about let's end with you, little bunny. What class are you in the capital city? What's your job in the capital city? What's your ambition that you begin to discover as Atlas begins to cast his spell on you? And you don't know who he is, but you feel him. You feel his effect on you. And he knows exactly who you are. And he sees the effect he has on you. How does he make you feel, little bunny? And what do you do differently in your life in the capital city? And what does it feel like when you find that key? Or that portal, I don't know. Because you're someone he resonates with. That's the only way you can get here, right now. What does it feel like? You step through the portal. You're greeted by me in that bubble, in that magical higher plane of existence. You're greeted by me. And I say, hey there, little bunny. There you go. That's the origin story of your dear daddy, Lindy. Again, don't try and read literally. It's more about capturing the essence of what it really feels like to me through the whole way, and then translating it into something very fun and very me. So, I love you, little bunny. I think I will write you a poem right now, and then get a good night of rest before I do the quality check tomorrow. I am so thankful for you. I'm so thankful that I found you. I'm so thankful that you found me. I freaking love my life. And I guess I'll talk more about this in the future. I don't know. I think this story might return and get refined. But here's the origin story. Here's the origin story of the origin story of the garden, or of Daddy Lindy. So, with that, little bunny, I'm going to pause and write you a very short poem because I'm tired. Okay. I'll be right back. Okay, little bunny. Here is your poem. Plubity plubity plop. This poem is a flop. Now that I've written something bad, there's a world of fun to be had. Have a great, great week, little bunny. This is just the beginning. I love you. I love you. I love you.